south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I have lots of Canadian listeners, and I always have someone or some people from Canada at my Expat Insider Seminar. So I'm thinking, Canadians, huh? Well, I figured out there's a disproportionate amount of Canadians listening to the show compared to the amount of Americans. That means per capita, there are more Canadians listening to the show than Americans. And that reflects also in the number of emails and phone and Skype consults, etc. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it's because it's so damn cold up in Canada. That just gives Canadians the extra incentive to get that Plan B going. But then there's that other strange factor that it seems like every single Canadian I meet here in Latin America, and when I met them up in the States too, they absolutely love winter sports. Ice hockey, skiing, ice skating, tobogganing, hunting moose and squirrels. I don't get it. Most people I know hate cold. So are they lying? Are they screwing with us? Or are they just victims of a kind of mass psychosis? Hey, according to my orthopod friend up in Chicago, that would be orthopedic surgeon, Canadians spend much more time in emergency trauma rooms than regular North Americans by a wide margin. Why? Because they're always twisting an ankle or breaking a leg on a ski slope or catching a hockey puck with their teeth. Which brings us to this email from a smart Canadian female entitled 20 More Reasons to Get the Hell Out of Dodge. Canadian Dodge. Is there a Dodge in Canada? Maybe there is. And she signs it, Una Rubia Caliente Canadiense. That's a hot Canadian blonde. I like it already. She starts out, Johnny, I'm from Canada, but I'm in Latin America visiting now. It's not my first time. I've been to Latin countries before, mostly Mexico, and every time I visited, I promised myself I'd develop a plan B and eventually get out of my Canadian version of Dodge. However, once vacation is over and I'm back in frozen Dodge land, I always seem to jump right back on the treadmill, and you know the drill after that. Memories fade, the new $1,000 iPhone 9 comes out, plans get postponed, and you get back into the minutiae of life. And like the Chinese water torture, it wears on you, but you almost don't notice how bad it is. Amazing the way we can fool ourselves and lie to ourselves. When we're back home for a while, once again, we accept things that we can change, but we keep tolerating for longer and longer periods of time. Meet Johnny here. That sounds a lot like the mantra they have in AA 12-step programs. You know the line goes something like, give me the courage and the wisdom to accept what I can't change. Something like that. I wouldn't know. I never been to an AA meeting, but my brothers are charter members and repeat offenders. Anyway, she says, once back from vacation, memories fade, plans get postponed, and you get back into the minutiae of life. Then, Johnny, something happened. Right before Christmas this year, I experienced the straw that broke the moose's back. Then another, and then another, and then another, all in one day. You gotta feel sorry for the poor moose. And here's how it went. It had been snowing all night. I got up, looked out the window, went outside, and at 8 a.m. I made a snowman. At 8:10, a feminist passed by and asked me why I didn't make a snow woman. So at 8:15, I caved and made a snow woman too. At 8:17, my feminist neighbor complained about the snow woman's voluptuous chest, which, by the way, I patterned on my own. But I didn't tell her that because she's bi and I didn't want to give her any ideas. But she complained, saying it unjustly objectified snow women. So again, I caved, and after radical surgery, my snow lady became an A cup. Well, at 8:20, the gay couple living across the street through a high-pitched fit. They said, wait a minute, by rights, there should be two buff, fashionable snowmen holding hands. At 8:22, the transgender UPS guy, or is it girl? Well, I forget now because on odd days he's male, even days female. He was agitated too. He said, I must have one snow person with detachable, interchangeable parts. At 8:25, the vegans at the end of the lane complained about the carrot nose, as veggies are food and have feelings too, and should not be used as decorative objects to amuse people. Then came the guys in the Greenpeace truck. They asked if I was using low-sulfur coal. I said, search me, and they said, hand them over. We'll have the analysis done and send you the bill. Then at 8:28, a guy drove by, rolled down his window, and yelled out, racist, because my snow people were white. Then at 8:31, the Muslim guy across the street looked at my snow woman and said, where's the burqa? At 8:40, the cops arrived, counted 10 people in my front yard, and said, let's have a look at your permit to assemble. I said, what? He said, oh, you don't have one? Well, it's a $200 fine if you don't go down to City Hall and get a permit ahead of time. Then at 8:42, my unhappy feminist neighbor complained again. She said the broomstick on my snow woman had to be removed because it depicted women in a subservient domestic role. So I did and fashioned a cell phone out of ice in its place. Then the cops who just handed me a $200 ticket said, looks like you're also violating our collection of rainwater law. About the fine, we'll have to check on that. At 8:45, the local TV news crew showed up. The Asian lady reporter stuck a microphone in my face and said, don't you think it's kind of a cruel and insensitive statement, a snowman with no eyes? Some people will construe that as blind shaming. Then she said, what do you propose to do next? And I said, I think I'm going to nail you right in the kisser with a couple of snowballs. She said, snowballs? That's sexist. So by 9 o'clock, protesters arrived, calling me terrorist, racist, sexist, homophobic, almost every nasty name you could think of, except the N-word. We don't use that in Canada. Then at 9:10, social services arrived and took away my kid. Then, Johnny, I heard this strange ringing, in my head. Suddenly, I opened my eyes. It was my alarm. It just went off. I'd had a nightmare. I got up, looked out the window, and it was snowing, but no snowman. No, Johnny, I decided right then and there, no more snowmen in my life. That's why I'm in Latin America scouting things out. Plan B, here I come. Then she says, oh, and Johnny, I forgot. There's one more unrelated reason why I'm down in Latin America right now. It's effing cold in Canada, and I just can't deal with the torture of going outside anymore. And I'm tired of lying to everyone about how much I love hockey and skiing. You know, us Canadians have our own kind of collective denial about cold, snow, and ice. We talk about how we love it all. That is, until we take our first trip far south and see how the rest of the world lives. In comfort. Signed, Rubia Caliente Canadiense. Formerly a cold Canadian blonde who's warm and comfortable and gonna stay that way. All right, Blondie Caliente, thanks for that one. You know, Blondie, I feel for you. I'm from way up north to Chicago, and it's pretty much like Canada most of the time. Talk about collective delusions. In Chicago, people lie about how much they love winter sports, too. Hey, you make do with what you grew up with and what's available to you, right? I mean, look, you grew up an Inuit, you eventually learn to love chewing on whale blubber. Now, as far as me, as for snow and ice, I've always hated it. Though I like the Hollywood version, you know, light blanket of snow on Christmas Eve and all that. But man, they never show you what happens the next day, do they? Especially if you live in the big city, even a small city. You know what a fresh blanket of snow looks like after rush hour traffic? It's just muddy, watery slush that you track back into the house in your car. And if you don't shovel it off your driveway and sidewalk after a couple hours, it's a pain in the ass and gets dangerously slippery. And these days, up in the first row, you better have that umbrella coverage paid up. And then you've got those Latinos, Latin Americans who've never visited the States or Canada. And man, I'll tell you, they've got some fantasy about what it's like to live up in Cleveland. You know, over the years, I've mingled with many Latinos who've never been to the States, but sure would love to get there. Now, as far as the dream of visiting the States, I've heard pretty much the same top 10 wish list come out of almost everyone's mouth. Number one on that list is almost always, can you guess? Visiting Disney World. Yep, in fact, just 2 days ago, I heard another Latina tell me about her great desire in life. Taking her mom and her kid to Disney World. How creative. All right, now can you guess the rest of the top 5 Latino coming to America wish list? In no particular order, it goes something like this. To visit New York. To visit my jammy. To live in the U.S. legally. Get a green card. And, of course, to see, touch, and play in snow. Which is why, and this always cracks me up, it seems every single Latino I know who goes up to the States for the first time and sees snow, they make this huge photo op out of it and smear it all over their social media. In fact, it's become kind of a badge of honor, a status symbol for a Latino to post photos of themselves having snowball fights, making snowmen, and diving in the stuff. In Latino culture, it's instant status showing that you got the money to go up to the States in the first place and that you probably visited Nueva York, which, unlike Miami, does have its snow days. So it's not surprising the hottest, most desirable profile photo on social media is a Latino horsing around in the snow. To Latinos, that's instant bragging rights. However, Latinos that actually live up in the northern parts of the States and Canada, they know the downsides of living in that kind of crappy weather. Nevertheless, they too will post social media profile pictures of themselves horsing around in the snow because they know the folks back home will see it as proof that they're living el sueño americano, the American dream. It's almost as if they get some kind of pleasure out of rubbing it in to the folks back home. For Latinos, it's all about the show. So they go out in the snow and the cold and they put on a happy face, even though they really hate that kind of weather and are freezing their asses off. Just like all of us who've lived up north. But for Latinos who haven't experienced that, you can't dissuade them of that snowman snowball fight fantasy. Yep, it's just another symptom of way too much cable TV. All right, back to the emails. Here's one that says, Johnny, have you ever had a significant head injury? No, but I did notice even as a very small kid that I didn't quite fit in with the other kids. But you know, there were no psychotropic meds for kids back then. All right, here's one from Stu. He says, Johnny, does anyone in Mexico or the rest of Latin America like Donald Trump? He says, I'm from Detroit, and the Latinos I meet, they absolutely despise Trump. So I assume it's like that or even worse in Latin America. What's your take? Hey, good question. But you know what? Trump almost never comes up in regular conversation, even long ago when he was first running for president. Though I have to say, the first 6 months of his term, most poor and working-class Latinos were scared to death. Because, you know, practically every middle and lower middle-class Latin family has a few illegal friends and relatives up in the States. And a lot of them who I've met and known had been up in the States and deported themselves. Then what had them scared? Well, all the rhetoric, all the talk about the new wall and beefing up ICE and the military to really get serious about deporting illegals. And that scared the hell out of the majority of Latinos because, can you guess? Remesas, you know, the millions and billions sent back from the United States to families back home via services like Western Union and MoneyGram. By the way, just as an aside, can you imagine how rich Western Union, MoneyGram, and the other international money transferring services are since they get 5 to 10% of all the dough that's transferred? And that's why Western Union and the like are so afraid of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Because they know in time, cryptocurrencies are absolutely going to kill their bottom line. In fact, they're getting a good dose of the future as they're experiencing what's happening in Venezuela and in many African countries right now. Because for some time now, no one's been able to send a Western Union or MoneyGram to Venezuela. And remises, more than ever, are part of their lifeline. So Western Union and the rest of those gouging scam artist money transfer services are scared to death of cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin. Because you can send practically any amount of money for under a buck. So think of it, if a Latino in Chicago wanted to send $500 to his grandma in Salvador by Western Union, it would have cost $50. But if he sent the same amount or 100 or 1,000 times that much using Bitcoin or other cryptos, he'd pay under a buck for the privilege. But I digress, as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about the hatred of Trump in Latin America. So there was a lot of fear in the first 6 months Trump got elected, but practically nothing's really happened with all the rhetoric and threats that you heard about in the news. I'm telling you, basically nothing. In fact, if you look at the remises that have been coming back to Latin American countries since Trump's been elected, you'll see in every single country case, remises have not decreased, but increased. So how's that possible? if more Latinos don't cross into the States because they're afraid or more are deported, you'd logically assume that remesas would be on the decline, but just the opposite. So are all the Latinos in the States getting raises, you think? Or could there be even more illegals flooding in, getting jobs, and sending money back? What's your guess? So you tell me, how does that square with what you've been hearing up in the States? Oh, and there's a P.S. attached to this email. It says, Johnny, if you were king of the world, how would you fix the problems in Latin America so there wouldn't be big caravans of illegals sneaking across the border? Good question. Let me think. Well, for starters, I'd make reggaeton illegal and put Pitbull and Daddy Yankee on the chain gang. Second, I'd eliminate all handouts and welfare to immigrants for the first 2 years they're in the country. Third, I'd make all drugs legal in the U.S. Now, about having a moratorium on government programs for immigrants. You did know, or maybe you didn't. There are about 90 government welfare handout programs you can get on. Or is it 60? Anyway, way too many. Notice how I didn't say anything about building a wall. Anyway, by legalizing drugs up in the United States, suddenly, no one in the third world could make any money producing them. In fact, if you want proof on how well that works, did you know that Holland, you know, the Dutch, they've had legal marijuana bars and stores for years now. And you know what? If you talk to people who are in the legal pot business over there, you'll find out they're all pissed off at the USA. They say legalization in the States has ruined the steady flow of gringo tourists looking to partake of some legalized pot. Sure, they have some steady pot tourism from other European countries, but the new pot laws in the States have killed a big part of their tourism. So pretty soon, when the rest of the world catches up with legalization, they'll be back to just tulip and windmill tours again. Meanwhile, they're saying American gringo marijuana tourism is down 40% in Holland. All right, now we'll turn to a subject that's on the mind of every gringo expat gonna be in wannabe. I've got Willie here. He just sent me a link to an article that came out just yesterday. The title, Gringo Prices and How Gringos and Expats Survive Economically in the Latin Culture. And as usual, I'll paraphrase and add my 2 or 3 cents as necessary because it's my show and I can do that. It starts, Los Precios Gringos, or Gringo Pricing, also known as the Gringo Gouge or Gringo Tax, is a hot topic in virtually all expat gringo communities. Of course, those terms refer to the price you pay over and above what the locals pay for the same goods and services, simply because you're a foreigner. All right, me, Johnny here. So far, so good. But it kind of shows that whoever wrote this article hasn't been in Latin America too long, because the truth is, if you're a gringo and you speak pretty good Spanish, you will not get hit for gringo prices. For one thing, if you happen to be in a market, there's going to be a lot of people around, mostly Latinos, and you'll hear what locals are paying for those items and how they're negotiating things. And you've got no such advantage if you can't understand or speak Spanish. All right, then the article says, it's a time-honored tradition, a game, almost a national sport, to pick up a little extra dinero from clueless tourists, gringos, and expats, especially newly arrived ones. Chances are, probably 100%, that you yourself were gouged, most likely, minutes after your arrival and you never even realized it. Though, to be fair, what we refer to as gringo pricing can be applied to almost any naive shopper or buyer of services anywhere in the world. We use the term only as a convenient handle that most expats understand and do relate to. Some of the most common places to get nicked are in small shops and stores where prices aren't marked and the proprietor has an opportunity to size you up before determining the final price. You won't find that in chain stores, supermarkets, department stores, and franchises from the first world where items are stickered and final prices computerized. Probably the number one place you're going to get gouged is at fruit and vegetable markets, the mercados. When you shop by yourself especially, you'll pay a higher price. If you shop with a local Latino and let them do the negotiating, the price will almost always be lower. All right, me Johnny again. You know, a lot of people let their maids do their shopping. They give them a list. And believe me, when she's in the market, she will get the lowest prices that can be had. But that doesn't mean she's going to pass all of that savings on to you, if you get my drift. So then, is that stealing? Well, technically, yes. But here in Latin America, even with your supposedly trustworthy maid/cleaning lady doing the shopping, in her mind, she's doing you a big favor by getting you the lowest price, even though chances are she's made out a little. Or maybe tucked away a few vegetables and goodies for Poppy and the kids at home. Though, to you and us gringos, that kind of skimming is definitely a breach of confidence, worthy of getting canned. But to her, it's sort of reasonable and customary in what everyone does. I'm sure you heard me tell the story before about the maintenance man I had who stole the radio from me. I caught him in the act and canned him. He couldn't believe I'd fire him for such an offense. His justification? Well, I had 3 radios in the house and he had none. According to his logic, the person could only listen to 1 radio at a time, so I had 2 too many. You can see the fractured thinking there, but this is Latin America. All right, then the article says, another manifestation of gringo gouging or gringo pricing is the curious way in which prices seem to change almost automatically, always higher, when they're quoted a second time. For example, you could be shopping in a reputable computer store. The owner or salesperson might speak some English. That's sometimes the case with tech. He'll say the price is $25. So then you walk around, peruse a few other things, and come back and grab the box and go to the counter. The price is suddenly changed to $35. And when you protest, he just might deny it. Or just give you a shrug and a look like God only knows or it's out of my hands. And it's much worse when dealing with landlords. For example, it's not uncommon for a landlord to say that rent for an office space is $170 a month. And then when you come back to pay a week later, suddenly the price has gone up to $200 a month. And when you question it, the landlord just might say, well, that's for electricity. Even though the place just might have 1 or 2 bare fluorescent bulbs hanging from a wire on the ceiling. Take, for example, just getting a simple shoe shine. If you walk up to a shoe shine guy and ask for a shoe shine without negotiating the price first, look out because you're in for the gouge. Instead of charging the normal rate, 50 cents to a buck, you just might get hit for $2, $3, or even $4. And even if you argue it out with the kid, he'll tell you it was because he had to put on extra wax or extra polish. It took longer than he thought because the shoes were grungy. But realize, since you haven't actually forked the money over yet, you're in kind of a position to negotiate. By then, you could usually get him down to half of what he asked for, which is still way too much. All right, meet Johnny again. You know, I see that shoe shine bit happen all over Latin America. You go to the airport or a gringo tourist area, they want $2, $3, $4 for a shine. However, when you're off the trail, it's 25 to 50 cents. The fact is, I've had shoeshine boys in gringo areas try to hit me for $3, and I can get them down to 50 cents or a buck, the normal price, in around 2 seconds. My secret? Well, it's no secret. I just say, look, I can go down to so-and-so area and get the same shine for 50 cents. Take it or leave it. And guess what? They take it. Oh, and there's that typical Latin gringo trap where the shoeshine guy, porter, tuk-tuk driver, whatever, when you ask him how much, he'll say, pay me in the end, whatever you think is fair. In most cases, he's gotcha, especially if you don't speak Spanish. What do you, a fresh green gringo, know about the price of things? In almost all cases, when you make a deal like that, you overpay. All right, back to the article. It says, lately, the most egregious case of gringo gouging we've seen occurred at one of the pharmacies. A veterinarian prescribed some antifungal meds for an expat's pet schnauzer. At the Farmacia, she was quoted $292 for 120 tablets for her dog. She was shocked, and when she discussed it with her veterinarian, he said, some pharmacists, when they see a gringo, will always pick the most expensive brand, even though they've got very cheap generics sitting right there on the shelf. Since there are lots of pharmacies around, she went to another farmacia where she bought the 120 pills for $20. So the first pharmacy tried to charge her 15 times as much. All right, meet Johnny here again. I've seen that happen over and over too. The good thing is, in most Latin American cities, there are so many chain pharmacies and mom-and-pop pharmacies too, even government-run subsidized pharmacies, if you're around long enough and have the time to check it out. Unless you're talking about proprietary drugs that have no generic yet, you can almost always do better than the quote you get from the first pharmacy you walk into, with some pharmacies charging 1, 2, 3, even 5 times as much as others. Again, we're talking about generics and drugs and supplements that are made in Latin America. There's a big difference in price, you know. You can get a generic that's made, let's say, in England, France, China, India, Malaysia, whatever, or a generic or a local brand name drug that's made in Latin America. Just shop around and keep your eyes open. All right, then the article says, what would you do if that happened to you and you realized you'd really been ripped off? Do you get pissed off? Do you want revenge? You want to call the pharmacist or vet out in front of everyone? Scream at him? Call him a rip-off artist? Cause a scene? Write an op-ed piece about it in a local gringo rag? Which they probably won't publish anyway because they don't like negative stories. It hurts tourism. Well, one of the problems is in places like Cuenca, Ecuador, where the expat, mostly gringo population, has exploded. That huge influx of gringos has caused many locals, especially businessmen, to believe that gringos are disrespecting their local culture. Some of them think, why not disrespect the gringo in return? Let's gouge them. The other thing is the fact that in Latino culture, business owners almost never think about cultivating future sales, which of course is all about reputation and positive word of mouth. They're in it for the moment to make a sale right now, get the money in their hand. As one Latino put it, when you're doing everything you can to survive today, you rarely give much thought to tomorrow. That's how average Latinos and Latino businessmen feel. So then what about upper middle class Latinos, even wealthy ones, who are business owners and don't really need the money to make the sale today? For them, it's kind of a sport, a challenge, or even a tradition. What you're dealing with is a Latino mindset. For example, a passenger in a taxi finds a wallet on the floor. He sees it contains $100, plus some IDs, credit cards, and such. Usually, you can almost bet on it. He'll take the money and give the wallet back to the driver and say, look, I found this. He won't feel bad or deceitful about it. In fact, he'll feel pretty good. He'll tell himself, God was good to me today. And he'll mean it sincerely. And he'll also feel righteous because the wallet IDs, credit cards, and such will be returned to the owner. Maybe. Depends on the cab driver. Bottom line, until you can speak a little bit of Spanish, when buying and selling, don't expect to be treated like a local. And I think whatever you pay, even if you've overpaid, don't get mad at the people or yourself. Because there's an old English saying, charge what the traffic will bear. All right, me Johnny again. Some good stuff in there. What do you think about the gringo gouge or gringo prices now? Okay, time enough for one more email. It says, Johnny, have you ever had a significant head injury?
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!